Hi, it's Karen Webster for Payments.com, and I'm here today with Michael Liberty, who is the founder and leader of Global Strategic Initiatives at Mozito. Michael, thanks for joining me today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Karen.
So we're going to talk a little bit about the latest trends with respect to financial inclusion, a topic that I know you personally have a lot of passion for and is clearly at the heart of the mission of Mozito. A couple points that I wanted to surface that came out of the report that we published together earlier in the month. First was the World Bank report that said, good news, we have now, thanks to the initiative of lots of folks like Mozito, we have about 700 million more people now that have access to banking-like services. You know, that sounds like good news, but yet there are still 2 billion people that don't and that live outside of any access to financial services, traditional or otherwise. So I wanted to get your reflection on that, the good news and, of course, what you think we still have to do.
I think that, you know, there is good news, you know, in the report, but it also highlights just how deficient a lot of the world is in providing support properly. And, you know, we're really see this as the beginning days of a revolution of financial inclusion. You know, when you look at the markets that we're focused on, everybody focuses on China and Africa, but we're focused on China, Africa, and India. And, you know, there's a devastatingly poor ecosystem that exists throughout all these villages that I travel to. You know, through our acquisition of this company that we're in the middle of buying, you know, I've been all over India. And it's just as devastating there as it is in parts of Africa and in fact, in China. So, we think it's the beginning, it's the early days. We think that the good news is that the world has woke up to the fact that there's this really devastating need and, in fact, opportunity to lead a financial revolution for the financially disenfranchised people of the world and bring them into an ecosystem of hope and opportunity and financial fairness, which has been the thesis of Mozito's business model for many years. And so I'm excited about it because I started this campaign many years ago. And when you're leading this type of a campaign, people many times think, oh, it's just a do-gooder type program. And I looked at it as a way to do well and do good and, you know, build a great business, but at the same time, really do something great for the world. So I'm excited about the findings.
I love your characterization of the effort around financial fairness. And I also want to pick up on something you said, which is everyone is focused on Africa and, you know, and China, but India being such an important part of the world. I'd love to just get your reflections, because regulation has really held back a lot of the progress that we could be making in India. I know that that's in the process of changing, but what's your perspective as someone who's been on the ground and all over the country? What needs to change, and what are you doing to help drive that change?
Well, I think that two things. I think that kind of Africa was the Wild West where anything goes, and there was no regulatory. And, you know, China's regulated, you know, extensively. And India, quite frankly, I think, is leading a very positive regulatory revolution. Under Modi, they've been very focused and proactive. And so I think that the willingness to allow payments bank licenses, which is now something that's about to occur, to be able to bring traditional financial services into the rural villages where there's been none whatsoever. So I think that, you know, having regulatory reform is a really good thing. India was slow to adopt, you know, the services because I think they were trying to be mindful and very thoughtful about what they put in place. So we're pleased with it. We think that they're going to be a crown jewel of achievement in financial inclusion over the next, you know, 24 months even. And we're very, very excited about what they're doing.
Wow, that's a pretty short horizon, all things considered.
Well, I think that, remember, we've been at this for a long time and, you know, we've been weeding the gardens and hoping things would grow for a while. And I think that finally we've seen everything start to blossom. And I really do believe that India will be very fast moving because you've got a dynamic economy. You've got a technology revolution underway. You've got some of the smartest people in the world. You know, one looks at Tata and I think they're the top IT firm in the world now. They were 1 and 2 with IBM. So you've got this brilliant ecosystem of talent combined with a leadership that's got a very pro-business approach and then this devastating population that needs it so much. So the right recipe is there, and we're very keen to play a big role in that, and we feel like we've got the right people in place to execute.
Speaking of devastating need, I want to highlight something else that came out of the World Bank study, and that is something they call the gender divide, and the fact that women overall lack access to financial services of any kind, more so than men, by a pretty significant margin, certainly varies by country, but that when women have access to financial services, lots of positive things happen, you know, taking control of the household income, becoming the household CFO, to use a term that they use, saving more, really making the family and the local economy that much stronger. What are your observations and thoughts on that point?
Well, on a personal level, I mean, I'm very, very big on, you know, women's rights and children's rights. And so from a personal perspective, it's like a big, big, big focal point of mine. Indeed, the lowest default rate in the world's financial ecosystem, including the United States ecosystem, are microloans to African women. So that's a pretty telling statistic, right? And if you really break it down in basic human terms, the mother is the heart and soul of a household, and she's the caretaker. And in fact, when women are the custodian of the financial resources, which is the case in many of these foreign countries, great things happen when you empower them. I'm particularly excited about what we're doing in India and Africa, where we're focused on facilitating through Mozito microloans that are done at appropriate charges, not these outrageous Shylock prices that many of these microlenders have preyed upon the poor. The poor and less fortunate are the ones that indeed need the most beneficial low-cost services, not being treated unfairly and subjected to predatory pricing. We think that is a great opportunity to not only empower women, that in these villages, imagine in India, a woman who sits and makes this magnificent jewelry, and today she has no money to buy the beads and the raw material. So she has to pay outrageous fees for a microloan and then be subjected to selling her goods as quickly as she can for tiny, tiny amounts of money just to get money to pay back this Shylock his money and then try to make a little bit to feed her family. I see the world differently. I want to provide lower cost financing to empower economic development so that women can buy a month's worth of beads and raw material. She can make the jewelry. She can then go into one of our merchants, image the jewelry, post it on the web, and someone in New York City can say, that's a magnificent gift to buy my wife because she loves Indian art and Indian jewelry, and buy it for, you know, $8 instead of 3 rupees. And electronically have the transaction occur at the merchant agent location in that village in some remote area of India. That's economic development. That's empowering people, not talking about it. And that's what we're doing. So we think that it's going to be the most important economic development tool is empowering women that are in these rural areas, in these impoverished economies, to empower them to build a better life for their family, whether it's making jewelry or it's growing vegetables or it's raising goats. They need access to capital, and they're good. They've proven to be tremendous custodians of resources that are given to them.
You know, one of the things that you mentioned was the variability in solution provider that is in the space trying to serve the community of the underserved. And, you know, we do track almost 60 providers now through this financial inclusion tracker that we work with you together to publish. And it was interesting, this particular report, of the 58 or so that we tracked, the average score in terms of the ability to serve the needs of those who need financial services and access to them was pretty bad. It actually dropped from the month before. So a 64, thinking about 64 as a grade on a report card, certainly that is not something you want to take home to your mom and dad. I'd love to get your perspective on that. Why is there such a problem in serving what is a vast population of people who need the services? Why are we doing such a bad job?
Well, it's because it's hard work, and it takes a long years and years of building an ecosystem to support the infrastructure needed to cover the vast majority of these people that need the services in rural areas. And so that's why I've been so focused on my merchant agent network, so that I have 150,000 stores in India that becomes a point of entry to engage with these unbanked consumers, where they can go They can get a mobile wallet. They can then access financial services. A lot of these big enterprises want to do good, but they have no execution capability. So they have a grandiose plan. They receive some capital. And then they say, we're going to do this in this economy. And they can't execute. And so I think it's about picking the right partners. You've got some magnificent people in the world. My hero is Bill Gates, because he cares so deeply about people. And, you know, despite his absolute extraordinary success, he is the biggest humanitarian alive. And, you know, he's focused like a laser. So I admire him, and I aspire to maybe only do, if I could do a fraction of what he's done for the world, I feel like I've done my part in life. And so I think by, you know, having leaders like him give people like me a beacon and an example to follow. And so that's what we're trying to do on the execution side. We'd like to think that we're going to be the execution solution provider to the companies that want to do well and provide these services and do good, like the Gates Foundation and Bill Gates and his wife, who have just been, you know, incredible. I can't say enough good about them.
I think you make a good point. It takes an ecosystem, to sort of borrow a phrase, because it is too big of a problem and too massive a scale to do this unless you actually can operate at scale and in a way that empowers others who share the desire to serve the underserved, to actually do it in a way that's adding to the collective ecosystem as opposed to trying to build it and do it solo.
Exactly.
Well, Michael, it was really great to catch up with you. Thanks very much for giving us your insights on a number of things that are very important in driving the financial inclusion agenda forward. We always look forward to talking to you. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much.